Well, we certainly aim to please. Welcome, everybody, to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, this Thursday, 18th day of July. Hope you are having a great week. It is Friday Eve, as Philip J. Vandervoort III likes to say. And, man, has this been an incredible week, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention, what's turning out to be a historic convention. All sorts of stories swirling around us that we are trying to keep track of. The convention and the president's upcoming or President Trump's upcoming speech this evening, just part of it. We've got two other major stories that are swirling around. One of them is unconfirmed but increasingly numerous reports that President Xi of China has suffered a severe stroke. It happened during the Communist Party's third plenary session. We don't know anything more than the fact that these reports are continuing to appear. When we learn more, we will let you know. That could be a huge issue on global politics. The other issue is, there's no other way to put it, a death watch over the nomination of President Joe Biden has begun. And part of it has been because of the success of the Republican convention. Even before the convention, President Trump had a solid lead, not just in the popular vote, but in almost all of the swing states. We played, and we'll replay it for you again, John King from CNN's report. See if you can call that up there, Big Mike. This is what they call an audible.
John, yeah, King, give me just a quick sec here. Yeah, I'll have that for you.
Has an exceptional analysis of just how bleak things look, which is why I completely believe Nancy Pelosi's recent communications with President Biden, saying you can't win. You're not going to win. And you might be taking Congress down with you. That's why I believe that this death watch is in play. And by the way, I don't believe Joe Biden has COVID. I believe that he's taking himself off the campaign trail. His last couple of appearances have just further reinforced all the reasons why his decline is unmistakable. And it's progressing. It's getting worse. And everybody knows it, regardless of politics. We'll be playing a couple of excerpts for you. But I want to sum it up here. Van Jones is an ardently liberal, but reasonable, a CNN commentator. And he was comparing Donald Trump to Joe Biden and the current state of the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. And he sums it up so well in less than 30 seconds. Have a listen.
There are a lot of people who want Biden to stay in. I want to just keep pointing out there's still grassroots love for Joe Biden. Everybody doesn't agree. But today is a terrible day. If you pull back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. You've got the nominees of this party getting their butts kissed. Biden's getting his butt kicked by his own party. The Democrats are coming apart. The Republicans are coming together. That's what's happening.
That is what's happening. There was hope that there would be fissures, divisions, fractures among the Republicans at the convention. It's happened before to both parties. Not happening at this one. Everyone's coming together. Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, everyone that matters is coming together to support the Trump-Vance ticket. The Democrats were really hoping that there would be some division, maybe a convention walkout of the few identifiable Nikki Haley delegates. No, even before the convention, she asked all of her delegates to support President Trump. She was given a speaking appearance. She was extremely strong in supporting a unified party getting behind Trump and making clear why. It is, the country cannot afford another 4 years of where we've been going. Anyway, So you've got that. Then you've got this problem, ongoing problem with Joe Biden really being, if you think about it, his own worst enemy. I mean, you know what the Republicans should be trying to do is get Joe Biden to go out and do as much speaking as possible. Every time he speaks, he just reinforces why people are beginning, people who are in his party are just wincing. And that's why I believe he does not have COVID. I think that he's, quote, in isolation because this is the period before he comes out and steps away. I think that's what's really going on. All of you who've been listening to me over the years know that I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and this isn't a conspiracy. I think this is a strategy for how he can gracefully step out. You don't want to step out by saying, you know, it's so obvious that there's no way I can beat this guy, and all my own people are telling me that I'm a loser and that I'm just going to make them losers as well, so I've got to get out of the race. Okay, that's not how you exit. You do so, and you cite your health as a reason, as a large contributing factor. So, like I said, a death watch has now begun over the Biden campaign. The triumphant unity that the Republicans have shown, particularly in the aftermath of the attempted assassination of Donald Trump last Saturday, has just made that inevitable. Oh, and by the way, I guess it had to happen. An MSNBC commentator, and by the way, a former Republican, in fact, a former Republican chairman, if you can believe it, has questioned whether Donald Trump was really struck by a bullet, whether he was really shot. We'll play you the audio coming up, but it's pathetic. And speaking of pathetic, I want to play a couple of clips of Joe Biden yesterday. He was being interviewed on Black Entertainment Television, BET, sat down, and this is what he sounded like. Let's start with clip one, where he appears to forget the name of his own defense secretary.
And so it's all about treating people with dignity. And it's about making sure that, look, I mean, for example, look at the heat I'm getting, because I named the Secretary of Defense to a black man. I named Ketanji Brown. I mean, because of the people I've named.
Doesn't really inspire confidence now, does it? He said, look at the heat I'm getting. He got heat because he appointed a black man to be defense secretary? What? Does the name Colin Powell ring a bell? I mean, Reagan brought him into as his national security advisor 40 years ago. George W. Bush made him Secretary of State, for crying out loud. What are you talking about? Look at the heat you're getting for Lloyd. You're getting some heat because Lloyd Austin has helped bring kind of a woke ideology into the Pentagon. He's getting heat for his policies, but that's not because of his race any more than Joe Biden is getting heat over his economic or border policies because Biden's white. I mean, race has nothing to do with it. This is about their policies. It's about what they're doing in office, not what they look like. Okay? So that's one thing. The second is, this is Biden losing his train of thought in the past winds of history. Again, he's trying to talk about getting internet access to low-income neighborhoods and areas that don't have internet access in rural America. Have a listen.
Make sure there's access to affordable internet, just like in Roosevelt's time, you know, back in earlier than that, making sure there was electricity and agriculture in the rural areas. That's all. It takes time for it to happen. And so it's just taking time for people to see it.
I gave it 5 days. I think that when I fly back home and start Monday morning's show, I think that Joe Biden will likely not be the Democratic nominee. I think that he's toxic. Now, understand, this is not affecting my endorsement of Joe Biden for the Democratic nomination. I, in a gesture of bipartisan generosity and unity, I endorsed heartily Joe Biden for the Democratic nomination a year and a half ago. I stand by that.
Ari Hoffman is here, and he would like to say that KVI, as an outlet, would like to endorse Joe Biden for a unity outlet. Yeah.
This is no time to walk away. This is no time for ageism in America, ladies and gentlemen. No time to walk away from Joe Biden merely because of his age. Doesn't matter that he went to school with Dwight Eisenhower. What matters is that he's the guy whose name we want on the ballot in November. Oh, do we ever. So, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to run someone else. And because time is of the utmost concern for the Democrats, I mean, their national convention is in a few weeks. 3 weeks is their national convention, and 98% of their delegates, 99% of their delegates are pledged to Biden, and they are obligated, especially those who were selected in primaries and caucuses. They are obligated to reflect the voters who selected them. The only way out for them is if Biden no longer is a candidate. And so if he just refuses to go, then you're going to have even further division and angry feelings. And, you know, Biden right now, this is the important part. Biden is being offered a graceful way out, a graceful departure. But I think this is also, Joe, it's got to be now. OK, 3 weeks from now and it's too late. Too much damage done. It's got to be now. This is what I believe is going on in the highest circles of the Democratic Party. And because it's coming so late, my guess is the Democrats don't want to have a food fight in the convention hall, much less a floor fight in the convention hall. And they're probably all going to line up behind Kamala Harris. And then there will be a media offensive that Kamala Harris, an undiscovered talent, so much potential there that we hadn't spent enough time appreciating just how strong and resolute and intelligent she is, that we're going to get all this vomitrocious rhetoric about Kamala coming up. But right now, it's, I think, for the Democrats, Project Extrication, extricating Biden from the Democratic nomination. That's how I see it. Now, if you see it differently, I'm happy to hear you out. You can text me at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757 outside King County. Same number, 206-421-5757. You can also give us a call. It's a busy day. We've got Big Mike with a terrific social media moment. I know this because I've seen young Zach helping with the research on this. And also, Steve Moore, our chief economist, who you often see on Fox News, is also here in Milwaukee. He's going to join us live at 6:35 this morning, thereabouts. And we got a lot of other things happening. Again, we are live at the convention in Milwaukee. Got to talk about J.D. Vance, his speech, what you thought of it, what impact he is already making. The youngest vice presidential nominee since Richard Nixon in 1952. You are listening to The Commute with Carlson. I'm really glad you're here. Good morning. All right. The Commute with Carlson, live from the Republican National Convention here in Milwaukee. Another successful day of the convention. We'll get into that later. Right now, it is time for the social media sweep here with Big Mike. What do we got going?
Well, you have young Zach instead. Sorry, John.
It's been hijacked.
Sorry to let you down.
We're live radio.
There's a lot of Secret Service.
Entire segment has been hijacked by young Zach.
A lot of Secret Service around. Don't say hijacked. Well, all the way from Milwaukee, social media sweep still sponsored by the Muckleshoot Casino Resort.
Yes.
And a nice moment last night, right before Don Jr. took the stage to introduce his father, Kai Trump, Don Jr.'s eldest daughter, took the stage to speak a little bit about her grandfather. She's 17 years old. And touched on just some of the things behind the scenes we might not get to see, softer sides of former President Donald Trump. She says, even when he's going through all these court cases, he always asks me how I'm doing. And my favorite line, he gives us candy and soda when our parents aren't looking, which I thought was very nice.
Every grandparent does that.
Exactly. Yeah, but that, sometimes okay. We need that reminder that that Donald Trump is still a regular grandparent. He hits the diet soda button and one appears. Well, Joy Reid made some pretty outlandish comments last night on MSNBC following the reports of Joe Biden testing positive for COVID, allegedly. Mike, you want to play that clip?
Here's the question that I have on that. These two men are both elderly. Donald Trump is an elderly man who, for whatever reason, was given 9 seconds to take a iconic photo op during an active shooter situation. Weird situation. We'll figure that out one day. But his survival of that and bouncing right back and going right to his convention is being conveyed in the media world as a sign of strength. This current president of the United States is 81 years old and has COVID. Should he be fine in a couple of days? Doesn't that convey exactly the same thing? That he's strong enough, older than Trump, to have gotten something that used to really be fatal to people his age. So if he does fine out of it and comes back and is able to do rallies, isn't that exactly the same?
No.
I mean, it's not exactly the same. It's not the same incident, but it's an elderly man coming through out of an illness.
It should.
Are they really this dumb over at MSNBC? I mean, are they really this dumb? Never mind their politics. That's just something a very dumb person would say.
And I also take issue. Someone
survived a shooting and bounced right back, and Joe Biden has COVID, and if he gets better, isn't that exactly the same thing?
Well, and she says,
what?
On the Trump side, she says the media is conveying him coming back from being shot. What do we decide? About 56 hours after he's shot, he makes a public appearance here at the RNC.
Yeah.
She says they're conveying that as a sign of strength.
That.
It is. It is a sign of strength.
Oh, gee. That's just classic.
And while this whole thing's going on,
that is classic MSNBC.
They're live here on the floor, like this. Clip is taking place live at the RNC. You can see the convention hall in the background. The Chiron says, Biden, after COVID diagnosis, quote, I feel good. Diagnosis? It's a test at Walgreens. No one's diagnosed with a cold or the flu or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
All right. It is 29 minutes after 6 o'clock. But by the way, it's very interesting. Joe Biden has COVID, yet was getting on and off Air Force One without a mask. That's interesting for a guy with COVID.
Disregard for public safety.
Well,
a dereliction of duty.
Or he doesn't really have it. Okay. Which is where I happen to be on that issue. You got almost 30 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. Oh, for heaven's sakes, one of Fox News' most popular commentators, and more important, our chief economist, Steve Moore, right around the corner. Going to be sitting down with him live on the commute with Carlson in just a few minutes. Great having you aboard, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It's 6:30. All right. It is 25 minutes to 7 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Now, every Friday, we get the high privilege, and so does he, Steve Moore, of appearing on the John Carlson Show. The chief economist.
There are three, but I am the chief.
That's right. The chief economist, which does include an increase in compensation, who appears with us here on the commute with Carlson. We always love having Steve Moore with us. You see him all the time on Fox News. He is very much in demand here in Milwaukee, but he carved aside a little bit of time for us this morning.
So, John, welcome to what you all in Seattle call flyover country. This is the great Midwest. I am a Midwesterner. As you know, I grew up about 80 miles from here.
Oh, that's right. You're an Illinois boy.
And so Milwaukee's really shown itself off, by the way. The weather has been absolutely perfect. The people are Wisconsin nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, folks, you should come to Wisconsin sometime.
You really, by the way, let me add a strong endorsement of everything you're saying.
Yeah.
This is a friendly town.
It is.
There's a lot of stuff to do.
It's historic.
A lot of listeners have told us there's history
here. It's Miller time here.
It's Harley Davidson time here. And so
this is the center of the brewing industry here in Milwaukee.
This is where
that's
the
Olympics. They call them the Brewers.
The Olympics, which used to be the Seattle Pilots, by the way.
That's true.
This is where the Olympic athletes do their speed skating training. Anyway, the bottom line here is it's also clean.
It is.
And it's relatively, compared to Seattle anyway, safe. And enjoyable anyway.
So, you know, John,
we've enjoyed our time here.
You and I have not talked since the assassination attempt. And if I may, I know we've been talking a lot about it, but can I just say one thing about this
that yes.
I think is really important. Mm-hmm. You and I are old enough to remember, I believe you're, I might be a little bit older than you are, but do you remember when Reagan was shot?
I do. I was in school.
I was too. March 1981, and I remember hearing this news that President Reagan had been shot in front of the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C., and I remember my heart just sank, and oh my God, you know, his presidency is just getting started, and he's been shot. And we now know, by the way, that if that bullet had been half an inch closer to his heart, he would have died. He almost died from that.
As it was, he almost died.
And here it is, we are 20-some years later, and if that bullet had been an inch over, Trump would have died. Now, I'm not an especially religious person.
If he hadn't turned his head.
Yes.
I mean, it just ever so slightly hadn't turned his head.
He would have been killed.
There is a fascinating and chilling computer model going around Trump and how he was moving his head and the trajectory of the bullet.
So,
wow.
Right. So my point is, I think in both cases, it was not their time. It was not their time to die. The country needed these two great leaders. We couldn't lose Ronald Reagan in 1981 when the Reagan Revolution was just getting started. And I really do feel, and I think Trump, I haven't not talked to him since since the Saturday, but everyone who I know who is around him says he is a changed man.
Yeah. You know, do you want to hear?
He is humbled by this.
He has spoken to private groups since this happened, including yesterday. And Mike, can you play that audio? This is
to hear that.
Donald Trump speaking to a small private gathering.
This has been our best campaign, and then I got shot. How does that happen?
Fight, 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 fight.
They're chanting fight, 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 like Trump did.
Well, you say, how did that happen? But I got lucky. God was with me, I tell you. That's what they call a close call. That was an amazing, horrible thing, amazing thing. And in many ways, it changes your attitude, your viewpoint on life. And I think, honestly, I think you appreciate God even more. I really do. Because something happened that... Something happened. Not that it was pleasant. It wasn't like it was a complete miss. But it was pretty terrible that can happen.
I had not heard that, but I think it confirms what I was saying, is I think that, you know, changes your life when you have a near-death experience.
And it clearly, if you saw Trump in his first public appearance, which was at the convention, mm-hmm. with the, you know, ear patch, mm-hmm. after...
Do you know he's been criticized by the left for wearing that ear patch? Are these people...
Yeah, he's now criticized. It's too big for the injury that we saw.
They felt crazy.
It's just amazing, the paranoia. And now Michael Steele from MSNBC is questioning whether he was actually shot. Maybe he was hit by flying glass.
Yeah, so the blood came from the... Oh, okay.
No, it's just getting so crazy. But you just made a very profound point, and that is... You look back and you say, was an angel sitting on Ronald Reagan's shoulder. It mm-hmm. wasn't his time. Mm-hmm. And what happened to Donald Trump? It wasn't his time, which means that he was meant to be here. And
there were assassination attempts against Lincoln during the Civil War. I mean,
yes.
And I think in all those instances, God intervened. I really do. Because, Reagan used to talk about divine intervention mm-hmm. that has made this country so great, and I think there's a lot to that. But we're here to talk about the economy.
Yes.
And we just released a report
The Committee to Unleash Prosperity.
Yeah, and it looks at 20 top economic measures. You know, everything from unemployment to poverty rates to gas prices to inflation to consumer confidence. I could go on and on. On 18 of those 20, which president do you think does better?
Between Biden and Trump? Oh, goodness sakes. Trump.
Yeah, Trump. Almost every statistic. And even on employment, where Trump does, I mean, where Biden does pretty well, guess where all the jobs are?
Well, a disproportionate number of them are government jobs.
Yes.
And a large, unexpected proportion of them are part-time.
That's true.
Jobs.
You must be reading the hotline. You're exactly right.
And here, I'll prove it. Yeah. I'll prove I'm reading the hotline. Yeah. The third thing is that a disproportionate number of them are held by immigrants, legal and illegal, rather than native-born Americans.
Yeah. Now, so the point is that I saw this article in the Wall Street Journal on the news side. And, you know, the Wall Street Journal is not the Washington Post, and not New York Times, where they said most economists, I'm not making this up, most economists, according to the Wall Street Journal, say Biden would be better for the economy than Trump. And I'm like, what? And they did a poll of top academic and Wall Street economists, said, oh, Biden will be better on inflation. Well, wait a minute. Trump was president, so you don't have to kind of make up what he...
Yeah.
And
how
you know
did
what
he
the
do
average
on
inflation rate was when Trump was president?
I'm going to guess the average inflation rate was probably 1.8 to 2%.
You're pretty close. 1.95.
Okay, because but by the time... And it was coming down.
Yes,
it was down.
1.5% when he left office. 1.5. You're exactly right, John. And so 18 months later, Biden takes the inflation rate from 1.5% to 9.1%. And if you notice lately what he's doing, he's blaming it on everybody but himself. It's the gas station owners. It's the greedy corporations. It's climate change. It's this or that. It's Trump. Yeah. You know, Trump's the reason we had runaway inflation. But if you just look at it objectively, because I know you have an audience, many people support Biden, many people support Trump. But if you just look at the objective facts, it is clear that Trump has been superior.
Well, here's the other thing. I'm so tired of hearing Biden go, 60 Nobel laureates, I think I'm doing a good job. Okay, look, the bottom line is most Americans don't judge the economy the same way that academicians judge the economy. They judge the economy.
You know what they look at? Their grocery prices. Their
what they see at the grocery store. And then when they're driving home from the grocery store, I got to get gas. So they pull in the gas station. That's something else they notice. And they get home, the mail's on the counter. And what's my power bill?
What's my insurance bill? What's my rent?
What's the interest rate on my credit card?
Yes.
That's what they notice. And they see a very different reality. And that reality is very different in the last 4 years than the previous 4 years under Donald Trump.
Well put. And I would simply add to that that there is this, I am in the swamp most of the time. We're in Milwaukee today, but you're usually in Seattle. I'm usually in Washington, D.C. And there is a bubble around Washington, D.C. There really is a bubble where I laugh when these all my friends in Washington say, oh, everything's so good in the country. Why are people so angry? I'm like, have you been outside the Beltway? Have you seen what's going on in real Main Street America?
Right.
And many of them don't. I mean, it's a problem that it's so insulated that they've completely lost touch with America. Trump has not lost touch with America. He is, I mean, there's something amazing about the guy because he's like a billionaire, and yet he understands working class America.
I got to ask you this. We only have about a minute, but you know the man. Explain to me why a billionaire from New York who used to be, you know, Mr. Man About Town in Manhattan, why does he care so much about the working class and those who are yet to be middle class?
I ask myself that question a lot. How is it that he's so in touch? By the way, Trump has transformed the Republicans into the working class party.
Yes.
And I think it's because he is an incredibly patriotic American. He loves this country and he loves the people. I've seen this. I've been around him many times when he goes, you know, by a construction site or, you know, the service people around him. And they love him because he treats everyone with respect. He really does.
Yeah.
He'll go out of his way to thank the Secret Service agent or to thank the waitress. I know we're running out of time.
You know, he got his idea for
I was just going to say that. What I call the tax break for the
working class.
Yeah, I said from a waitress.
From a waitress.
Because he talks to real people. And so he is the man of the people. Look, I don't agree with everything Trump does, you know, and I tell him when I don't agree with him. And nobody does. But I think he is the man for the moment. I really do.
I think his moment has arrived again. And I think, and I personally believe that when I take the air on Monday for the Monday show, I don't believe Joe Biden will be the Democratic nominee.
You mean this Monday?
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen that fast.
I think the death watch is underway on his presidential nomination.
Well, I've said on your show for the last year I didn't think Biden would be the nominee. And, you know, the Democrats, they're hoisted, the old saying, hoisted in your own petard. I mean, they put this guy up there. They knew he was brain dead. Shame on you and the media, and I'm going to include you in that mass class. It was the biggest cover-up in American history.
Yeah.
And the media did nothing. Where were the watchdogs?
I stood tall. And even though I'm a Republican, I endorsed Biden for the Democratic nomination because I want him on the ballot
also,
in November.
You know what? Also, he's the one that people voted for.
Yep.
I mean, these guys who claim, oh, he's a danger to democracy. You know, Trump is a danger. They want to disenfranchise 8 million people went out and voted
that
for
is,
Biden?
That is true.
How many votes did Kamala get? How many votes did Gavin Newsom get? How many votes did Gretchen
sure.
Whitmer get? Zero. But it's back to the black, you know, what did we used to call them? The smoke-filled rooms.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Hey, great. Great.
Okay, could I
comments.
Get paid, please? Come on. I haven't been paid in 2 weeks.
We'll talk about that. Thank you.
Because I am the chief economist on the John Carlson Show. John, good to
Thank
be with you in person, my friend.
You got
I'm
it.
Coming to Seattle in a couple of weeks, so I hope to see you.
Excellent. Okay? You will. Lars Larson right around the corner. Oh, boy, you meet all sorts of great people here. Coach Joe Kennedy from Bremerton High just swinging by here. It is 53 minutes after 6, 7 to 7, and my good buddy Lars Larson joining me for a couple of minutes, checking in our noon to 3 host. Lars, I got one question for you, just one question. Are you ready?
All I got to do is tell you I'm envious of you that you're at the convention, although I'm kind of glad to be at home watching from a distance, so go ahead.
The question I have, when did you start writing speeches for J.D. Vance?
Now, did it sound like that?
You, J.D. Vance, I'm watching the speech. I said, this sounds like Lars.
Really? Well, that's kind of a nice compliment.
Did you miss the speech?
Maybe you don't.
Did you miss J.D.'s speech?
I did. Actually, we had some people campaigning through our neighborhood who knocked on the door, and Tina and I sat down to talk to them, and it got in the way of watching some of last night's events.
Well, I tell you what, between now and noon, check out J.D. Vance's speech. This is a working class kid, in fact, less than working class. Okay, I mean, he really grew up not only in poverty, but in dysfunction. And we'll get into that because we're going to play clips of J.D. Vance's speech in next hour. But more than that, Lars, he's an economic populist. And I just said to myself, boy, this sounds like Lars.
That's quite a compliment. Thank you, John. Well, so it wraps up. Now, tell me this. The Democrats were going to start doing an online vote tomorrow and count the votes for Joe, and now they pushed it off till August. Does this mean he's done?
Yes. In my opinion, when I start Monday's show, I do not believe Joe Biden will be the nominee. The success of the Republican convention here, I think, has made that all but inevitable. But there's a couple of other reasons. Just Joe Biden just ain't making it. It's fallen apart for him. It is coming up here on 656, the John Carlson Show, hour number 2, right around the corner on the commute. Just so much going on here. Hour number 2 of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, broadcasting live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. A lot of things going on. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about J.D. Vance's debut as his maiden speech as a vice presidential nominee. A fascinating guy, a study in contrasts, as some would say. The model of the American dream. I mean, he's not yet 40 years old, and he grew up not only in squalor in a dying mill town in Ohio, Middleton, Ohio, but in a completely dysfunctional household as well, racked with the very problems of American decline in hollowed out Rust Belt cities that you read about. He lived it, wrote a best-selling book, a good one, critically acclaimed and popular book made into a movie called Hillbilly Elegy. If you have a chance to read it, please do, because what he says, he doesn't just chronicle his life. He makes some poignant and pungent observations about why people are still living like that in the United States. He also, you know, talks about the most important essential ingredient in American life that really is a signal of what America is all about, and that is the word hope. Hope that things can get better, and, of course, opportunity to make it better. He made the most. And while he is joined the ticket is popular with the delegates. America, I think, takes a wait-and-see attitude because most Americans have never heard of J.D. Vance. If they haven't seen the movie, and if they hadn't read the book, and if they don't live in Ohio, where he happens to have grown up and where he's now representing in the United States Senate. But this is a guy whose politics are very skeptical of the concentration of power. Now, this is the big change that I think we have seen in the Republican Party over time. And that is that the Republican Party used to be skeptical about the centralization of power in government, particularly the federal government. Remember Ronald Reagan's famous line from his inaugural in 1981, government is not the solution. All too often, government is the problem. J.D. Vance and Donald Trump, their opinion would be more along the lines of the concentration of power anywhere in corporations or in government or in unions. That is the problem. You want power dispersed. And to some people, that looks like he's declaring war on the traditional Republican Party. I don't think so. What we have seen is incredible clout and the growth of power in some corporations, particularly high-tech corporations. Put it this way to illustrate my point here. Do you believe that your privacy is threatened more by government or more by private companies? Now, my guess is you're probably thinking, probably both. That is what I mean when there is increasing skepticism about the concentration of power in the hands, not just of government, but also in the hands of corporations. Now, usually the growth of power in corporations is checked and balanced by competition. Other corporations competing tend to give leverage to customers, to consumers, and prevent the growth of power in just a few major companies. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And we saw, for instance, when a few social media companies, Meta, often known as Facebook, X, known then as Twitter, Google, when they were YouTube, when they were disenfranchising and cutting off access to their platforms of people who had accounts, and they said, well, you can no longer use this platform. There were others, but the concentration of power was so immense within Google, within Facebook, within Twitter, that you were at a decided disadvantage as an individual without it. That's another example of the concentration of power. So that's what I think this ticket is all about. That's the major difference between a Republican 40 years ago and a Republican today. Just a little more skepticism, skepticism toward government then, skepticism toward the concentration of power today. All right, let's hear what J.D. Vance had to say last night. Introduced by his wife, who's absolutely charming. He met her in law school. Her name is Ushi. And she introduced him. They were both in at Yale Law School at the same time. And she's a very successful lawyer in her own right. And J.D. Vance, who, again, grew up in terrible circumstances, and then he wanted to go to college, which no one in his family had been to college, and he couldn't afford it. And 9/11 hit, and so he said, I'm going to join the Marines. So he becomes a Marine, serves honorably, gets the GI Bill, and makes it to The Ohio State University. I know, for some reason, they insist on calling it The Ohio State University. I don't know. It's just a thing with them.
Yeah, but if you call it The Ohio State University.
It's like, yeah, The University of Washington. I don't know.
But well, I wonder if that's like their highways. You know, it's like, you know, like The 405, The I-5, that kind of thing. I think it's a not West Coast thing.
Well, all I know is this. That if you are talking to someone who's an alumnus and you say, oh, you went to Ohio State? They very, very well might say, I went to The Ohio State University. It's just, okay, fine. I didn't know there was more than one. But anyway, and after he got out of Ohio State where he excelled, his biography was so unusual. And his accomplishments so stellar that he made it to Yale Law School and came under the tutelage of a Yale Law School professor named Amy Choa. Does that ring a bell? Anyone ever hear of a book of The Rise of the Tiger Mom? Jeffrey Pojola from KNWN. Yes, he says, I know that. He eventually made some money in the Bay Area as a venture capitalist and then went into politics very successfully as a Senate candidate and was not there very long before tapped by President Trump to be not just his running mate, but I believe his protege. I believe that Trump wants his movement, his philosophy, to live beyond his career. And I think that he believes J.D. Vance is the man who will do that. So, with that said, here's J.D. Vance last night in Milwaukee.
I was lucky. Despite the closing factories and the growing addiction in towns like mine, in my life, I had a guardian angel by my side. She was an old woman who could barely walk, but she was tough as nails. I called her Mamaw, the name we hillbillies gave to our grandmothers. Mamaw raised me as my mother struggled with addiction. Mamaw was in so many ways a woman of contradiction. She loved the Lord, ladies and gentlemen. She was a woman of very deep Christian faith. But she also loved the F word. I'm not kidding. She could make a sailor blush. Now, she once told me, when she found out that I was spending too much time with a local kid who was known for dealing drugs, that if I ever hung out with that kid again, she would run him over with her car. That's true. And she said, JD, no one will ever find out about it.
Life in the Vance household was at times unusual. Have a listen.
And our movement, ladies and gentlemen, it's about grandparents all across this country who are living on Social Security and raising grandchildren they didn't expect to raise. And while we're on the topic of grandparents, let me tell you another Mamaw story. Now, my Mamaw died shortly before I left for Iraq in 2005. And when we went through things, we found 19 loaded handguns. They were...
Now, can we stop the tape here? Can we stop the tape for just a second here? Okay, just put it on hold, because if he had said that at a Democratic National Convention, the crowd would have been horrified. They would have went, what? Loaded handgun, 19 loaded guns in a house. But hey, this is Appalachia. And so here is the reason for that.
Now, the thing is, they were stashed all over her house, under her bed, in her closet, in the silverware drawer. And we wondered what was going on, and it occurred to us that towards the end of her life, Mamaw couldn't get around so well. And so this frail old woman made sure that no matter where she was within arm's length of whatever she needed to protect her family. That's who we fight for. That's American spirit.
I don't think they need to fight for Mamaw. I think Mamaw is pretty capable of fighting for herself. Oh, there's someone who, if they're hawking an unpopular product from door to door, you know,
if her door Mamaw. Has a sticker that says no solicitors, you better believe she means it.
Anyway, and one final clip here we wanted to play.
And it's about, our movement is about single moms like mine who struggled with money and addiction but never gave up. And I'm proud to say that tonight my mom is here, 10 years clean and sober. I love you, Mom.
And they show her in the crowd, and this is obviously, you know, sometimes you can look at someone and see they've had a tough life. She looks like she's had a tough life. JD's mom. Now the crowd's chanting JD's. The crowd was having a great time last night. Anyway, and by the way, it was a very moving moment.
And you know, Mom, I was thinking it'll be 10 years officially in January of 2025. And if President Trump's okay with it, let's have the celebration in the White House.
That's wonderful. Everyone out there who has had someone they love in their life suffer badly from drugs and almost die. And by the way, his mom almost died several times. She was deep into addiction. And then come back again and get their life together. Everyone knows the joy you feel. It's like the parable of the prodigal son in the Bible, where the son disappears and you just write him off, he's gone. And then comes back. And people who have had a loved one in their family who has suffered from drug or alcohol addiction who has come back, you just feel so joyful that, hey, they're back again. They had been leaving. Even when they were around, they were leaving because they were living for drugs. They were living for alcohol. Now they're back again. So that's just a wonderful moment. And it goes to show, you know, one of the things Republicans have been rapped for is not having empathy for people who are struggling. Well, now, soon, America might have a new vice president who has lived it, who knows it all too well. It's 21 minutes after 7 o'clock. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We get back. It is Young Zach again with the social media sweep from Convention Central right here in Milwaukee, the Republican National Convention. We are broadcasting live. It's 7:25 on the John Carlson Show. Time for the social media sweep. Philip J. Vandervoort, the third out of town. No problem, because Young Zach has a superb social media sweep report coming right out.
I'm also out of town, but I'm still going to do it. Brought to you by the Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So here from Milwaukee, we're going to talk about a local angle on a marsupial story in my neck of the woods, Parkland, Washington. So Fox 13 reported Sunday morning, so it kind of got a little overshadowed by some of the assassination attempt stuff, but there was a loose wallaby hopping around Parkland.
Now we know what a marsupial is.
You sure do.
Those of us who had forgotten ninth grade...
It's a miniature kangaroo of sorts. Of course, Parkland doesn't get the glitz and the glam that King County does with a zebra, but that's all right. We had a loose wallaby Sunday morning. Washington State Patrol and Pierce County deputies responded to a traffic hazard at 158th and B Street. Fox 13 reported when troopers arrived, they to their surprise, found a wallaby. The troopers and deputies captured the animal, as they described it, having a long tail, 2.5 feet tall, with big ears and tiny forearms.
Where'd they find him?
Just down the street. Down the street. Yeah, I don't want to misgender the wallaby. Just a little bit down the street from the petting zoo it got loose from, it seems. So,
what is it about wallabies and zebras running around the highways? All right,
fun little Easter eggs when you're driving around. 10 points each. All right. On a more serious note, for whatever reason, the head of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, was spotted walking around the convention hall here at the RNC yesterday. And it was that's one of the kind of cool things we're getting to see is, once you're inside this perimeter, there's no car. So these VIPs and celebrities, now, of course, Secret Service could have a car wherever that she wants. But it's fun to see all these people walking around. Yesterday, Roger Stone, Vivek Ramaswamy, Riley Gaines, all people, Representative Brian Mast, we're hoping to have on our show this afternoon. These are people just walking around, which is fun to see. But anyway, Marsha Blackburn confronted the head of the Secret Service yesterday walking through the convention hall. Take a listen.
This is exactly what you were doing today.
This
on the
was
call.
An assassination attempt. You owe the people answers. You owe President Trump.
You owe the people answers. You owe President Trump answers. And one of the other senators was bellowing out, you're stonewalling.
Yeah, these were U.S. senators who spotted her walking through just the concourse of the stadium and quickly, swiftly went and confronted her. The video, there's quite a crowd following her, and she's just no comment walking to wherever she's headed. Kind of an interesting sight. Not quite sure why she was here. Certainly not quite sure why she was out in public.
I think it probably has something to do with showing that the top person at the Secret Service is here on site, where the Secret Service has its most important assignment of the moment, which is protecting President Trump during the convention. I'm guessing that's what she's doing here, you know, trying to show that we're hands-on. It is highly unusual to see United States senators engage like that in public. She did meet with several of them, but again, it was like a gaggle. It was not in a meeting room. They were just, you know, surrounding her and demanding answers, and clearly don't appear to be getting those answers. Her interview with, I think it was NBC, was not good. This is when she complained about the sloped roof being a reason that they hadn't secured it with personnel on top, because it had a slope to it. By the way, it was a very minor slope. It was very minor. Anyone who works in the roofing business said,
or has hung Christmas lights.
Yeah, that's what kept you from getting up. But no, the explanations are not persuasive, and too many really good questions have arisen, backed up with evidence and facts about why did this happen? Why did it go down the way it did? Why so many missed opportunities to prevent this attempted assassination that did take the life of an innocent man, Corey Comporator, a fire chief, and two others also shot. It's 7:30 on The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. One of the most talked about and discussed and certainly debated, and I think my next guest will also say most demagogued, documents in the country today is called Project 2025. We're hearing all about it, mostly from Democrats who say that it is an attempt to create extremism and overlay it on the entire federal government. They tried to tie it directly to the Trump campaign, and President Trump said, it's not part of my campaign. This is an independent organization doing their own work. It's an organization I'm very familiar with, the Heritage Foundation, which was founded for the purpose of trying to bring conservative, lesser government policies to Washington, D.C., a place that, frankly, a lot of people think need a lot of lesser government policy. Anyway,
absolutely.
Derek Morgan, executive vice president who could tell us all about what is in Project 2025 and maybe more important, what isn't in Project 2025. Welcome to the show. Good
Thanks.
To have
Good
you
to
on
be
the
with
commute
you.
With Carlson.
Yeah, great to be with you. Yeah, it's received a lot of attacks, millions of dollars worth, and it really shows the desperation of the left. You know, they don't seem to have much of a candidate or a platform, so they've actually spread a lot of misinformation and disinformation. You know, it's funny how they tend to project that on others, and we've had major papers like the USA Today do fact checks and say, actually, this isn't in, this isn't in, this isn't in. We have a myth fact, Project 2025's Twitter feed. You can look at it. We go through dozens of things that aren't in there.
Because of time constraints, give our listeners an idea of what is alleged, what is said, and what your actual document shows.
Yes.
And by the way, I should point out, this is a 900-page
document. It's over 900 pages. More than 100 groups are part of this, too. And Heritage, every 4 years, has had what we call the Mandate for Leadership, going back to Ronald Reagan. So it's not new in that regard. Mm-hmm. This time we got more than 100 groups together.
So it's the most comprehensive approach to bringing conservative governance to the nation's capital.
That's right. That's right. Go agency by agency, bring in the top experts from these 100 groups and elsewhere to put it together. So some of the things they're saying are, you know, that we're going to ban abortion. That's actually not in there. They talk about, in fact, they polled on 8 different items, and they had to pull back 3 of the items because they weren't actually in there. We pushed back. We said, actually, these 3 things aren't in there. You shouldn't even be polling on it.
So they didn't misrepresent it. They just said something was in it that ain't in it.
They completely made it up. This project was really designed to try to cohere the whole conservative movement. Let's get these 100 groups together and figure out what we all agree on. And we were pretty successful. I would say on trade, we ended up having 2 chapters on that because we just couldn't come to an agreement. You know, like a lot of the country right now, we're rethinking that. How do we have a strong country with a robust trading relationship? And then with labor, we had some back and forth. And interesting, too, here at the convention, we just
last night.
Yeah, we had the president of the Teamsters.
Sean O'Brien,
that's
Teamsters,
right.
First time a Teamsters president has ever addressed a Republican convention.
That's right. And so, you know, there's these cross currents in the movement. But apart from those two, we had wide agreement of what we wanted to push for. And we don't expect any candidate to pick all of it up. We started this 2 years ago before anybody knew who the nominee was going to be. And we think this is the best and brightest minds of the conservative movement. We hope the new president will take it up in January 2025.
So I want to talk about 2 particular issues that start lots of arguments between Republicans.
Sure.
I want to start with trade. Now, as you know, Pacific Northwest, Washington State, Seattle area, heavily trade dependent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, Donald Trump's claim is that if you use the threat of trade, trade tariffs, and you show you're prepared to follow through, that can actually open up more trade.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. And I think for too long, we just did unilateral disarmament. And we didn't fight for our producers like we should in trade. And Donald Trump came along and put his finger right on that. Now, he and I may disagree on trade. Maybe I wouldn't go quite the same way he would. But he understood that insight, that the access to the American market is a huge leverage point. And let's use that so that our producers have access to other markets. Let's have free trade with free people. You know, and we don't think that we should be having a free trade relationship with China, certainly, when they cheat, when they require you to have joint ventures that transfers technology.
It's like doing business with a thief. They steal intellectual property.
They do, and they use slave labor in their own country. So how can you have free trade with such a country? You can't.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't Amazon pull up stakes?
Amazon had, you know, you look
on
at you look at GM too.
Close their facilities there,
and others are following suit. You know, you look at GM. Funny enough, actually, apparently Chairman Mao drove a Buick back in the day, and so for whatever reason, people really liked Buick for a long time. But their sales have just gone off the cliff, and that's kind of a pattern with them. They'll invite the companies in. They end up one way or another getting their intellectual property, and then they kind of transfer it over to their national champions, and then the U.S. sales just plummet.
Right.
Do we need to see this in every single area? No, we don't.
No, I think a lesson and an example need to be imparted here.
Yeah.
And I think China is a good example, good place to start.
It absolutely is. That's right. And then with the rest of the world, I think he's a deal maker. He's a businessman.
Yeah.
He understands seeing somebody face to face, looking them in the eye and saying, we're happy for you to have access to our market, but our stuff's got to have access to your market. And I think that kind of strength will really bring results.
I'm so glad to hear this. And I'll tell you why, Derek. My experience has always been that free trade proponents will roll up their sleeves and they'll try and make the best deal possible. And when they run up against someone who, you know, a country that is simply saying, we'll take your goods, you can't have ours.
Yeah.
They say, oh, shoot, that means we'd have to impose a tariff. Tariffs are taxes. We're conservatives. We don't like taxes.
Yeah.
So forget that option.
Yeah.
So we end up getting screwed over.
We do. We do. And that we can't do that long term as a country.
No, I think that's why Trump said, no, no, we're going to try it this way.
Yeah.
The threat of a tariff, we will follow through.
That's right.
Now you might want to open up your markets after all.
That's right. And, you know, I love the concept of free trade. I think all other things being equal would be great, right? But you look at these agreements, they're not free trade agreements. They're thousands of pages long with all kinds of rules on this, that, and the other.
Right.
Trump called the bluff. Said, oh, yeah, let's have free trade. Let's make it one page and it's free for both sides. Oh, wait a minute. We can't do that.
Simple is not better for people who are trying to hide things. Long
That's
agreements
right.
are important. So I want to ask you about another, and this gets right to the root of federalism, Derek,
mm-hmm.
and that is the abortion issue.
Yeah.
Barry Goldwater, who wrote the best-selling conservative manifesto of all
time.
Conscience of a conservative.
Yeah, that's right.
There's not a word about abortion in there.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him once, because it wasn't an issue
right.
you know, in 1964.
Right.
Of course, it became a defining culture wars issue.
It did.
Starting in 1973 when it was
That's
nationalized
right.
by the Supreme Court.
That's right.
And the Dobbs decision basically said, no, no, give it back to the states
right.
and let abortion policy reflect the views of the people in those
right.
states.
Right.
So now you have some conservatives who are saying, no, we need mm-hmm. a national policy
mm-hmm.
protect all life mm-hmm. according to one standard.
Right.
And then you have the Antonin Scalias of the mm-hmm. world, you know, rest in peace,
mm-hmm.
Who are very pro-life, but they mm-hmm. say, no, no, it should be left to the states. And
yeah.
then, of course, you have people on the left who want to nationalize it in the other direction.
Of course, of course.
So what's a good conservative to do?
Well, I think you're right. Conservatives are split on it. We at Heritage look forward to the day when every human life is protected. One of the things we most appreciate about the Dobbs case is it sent it back to the people and back to the legislature where it belongs. So Roe really ignited the originalism movement in constitutional law. Ed Meese, who is emeritus trustee
yes.
for Heritage.
Exactly.
We have the Meese Legal Center, forefront of that. So we appreciate all of those things. And look, that gives us an opportunity to fight. It's state by state right now. And pro-life folks have got to go out and convince the American people that they're right.
I will tell, I'll tell you this, the pro-abortion rights forces are better at politics
yeah.
so far than the pro-life forces, maybe because the pro-life forces have been talking to themselves for
maybe,
a long time
but
and not to a wider audience.
That could be. I think the biggest thing that I saw mm-hmm. is they're being outspent 200-1. The pro-life
great,
forces
great
just
point.
Just
great
don't
point.
Have any resources, so it's David versus Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
So the results have not been good so far. And so I think it's incumbent on Americans like us at Heritage who want to support every life to go out there and convince the American people that lives
which,
are worth saving.
Which is what federalism is all about. Follow the examples that work.
It is.
You know,
it's really the left that's radical on this issue when you look at it. Like former Governor Northam from my Commonwealth of Virginia, he literally said on the radio, the baby will be born, and then the doctor and the patient and the parent would have a conversation about what happens to the baby.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They're the ones that are
you know,
extremists.
I would have thought that he simply misspoke, except he's a doctor.
Yeah.
Governor Northam is a doctor.
That's right.
So,
scary.
So, again, what's great about this document, and I have not read it all, and I'm not going to read it all, 900 pages, but you can read it according to the subject matter that you find most interesting.
Absolutely.
And
it's free of charge to everybody at project2025.org. It can be downloaded for free. And it has been a record number of times, and we're happy to have it out there. We're not hiding anything. We think this is the right medicine for America to reject
Project,
the left.
Project2025.org. Check it out. Make up your own mind.
Yes.
And I think you'll be surprised by a lot of what you read at Project2025.org. Derek Morgan.
I enjoyed
Heritage.
It.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's a really great, great document, project2025.org. When we return, unbelievably, a commentator for MSNBC is questioning whether Donald Trump was really shot or not. unbelievable, and it's coming from Michael Steele, who, like on MSNBC, a former Republican turned Trump hater. Anyway, we'll play that comment for you. Also, we may have another special guest joining us in just a couple of moments, and we have our contest. That's right. Take the trip. Keep the cash. I'll be giving out the secret word of the morning in about 15 minutes on the John Carlson Show. It's a busy Thursday morning. Right where you need to be, it is 8 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, broadcasting live from the National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The other side, if you will, is appears to be increasingly unhinged, at least parts of the other side, about Donald Trump's courageous, triumphant response to the attempt on his life, even in the seconds after it had failed. The iconic photo of him thrusting, when he came to his feet, thrusting his fist in the air and yelling, fight, fight, fight. Already a photo editor, this is according to the national news media outlet Axios, a national news outlet's photography editor is suggesting they not show the photo because it basically makes Trump look too good. It's unbelievable how some people in the media don't self-edit themselves. And then you have Michael Steele, who is an MSNBC commentator and a former Republican chairman, who's now an anti-Trump, virulently anti-Trump activist, questioning whether Trump was even shot. I kid you not. Have a listen.
In the last 5 minutes, was if there was a unity memo, Carrie Lake didn't get it or didn't follow it.
Burned it.
All of that for your views.
So let's start with last night in the Band-Aid. That's fine. Where I am at this point is it's been 3 days going on four since this horrific event occurred. A person lost their life, two have been severely injured. And yet we've not received a medical report from the hospital, nor have we received a medical report from the campaign or from the Trump organization about the extent of the damage to his ear. If he was shot by a high caliber bullet, there should probably be very little ear there. And so we'd like to know that. Is there cosmetic surgery involved? What is the prognosis for recovery? Were there stitches? What is the extent and nature of the damage to his ear? Was it caused by a bullet as opposed to, as some reports from those on the scene, other reporters, saying that it was actually shards of glass from the teleprompter itself, not the bullet? So there are a lot of questions around that ear.
Okay. This is just vulgar. This is obscene. And it's absurd and ridiculous. First of all, the shards of glass supposedly came from the teleprompter being shot through with bullets, but neither one of the teleprompters was touched by the shots. The shots didn't hit the teleprompters. He wasn't aiming at the teleprompters. And there is a chilling photo of a bullet taken by a New York Times photographer, the tracings just on the other side of his head after striking him. So, again, we are dealing with people who really are just immersed in both denial, driven by hatred, and that pretty much sums up MSNBC. Hour number three of The Commute and the contest, word of the morning, right after this. And we are back. At 3 minutes after 8 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, a historic convention with a lot of history happening around it, in part because of it. This has been a very successful event for the Republicans. They managed to bring the party together. They managed to establish unity, and not just unity, but momentum. One former contender for the presidency, in fact, he was endorsed strongly and with no reservations by radio host John Carlson back in 2016. as the former governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, and I still think it was a great endorsement, and I still think Scott Walker would make a great president. He is here in Milwaukee supporting the reelection of President Trump this week. Scott Walker.
Great to be with you. We're glad to host you here in the great state of Wisconsin.
Yes.
And by the way, don't worry, I'm a quarter century younger than Joe Biden, so I got plenty of time.
You do.
I do.
Absolutely. And by the way, let me just say, I've been around Milwaukee. I've been trying to get around town. What a friendly city.
Thank you.
Friendly people.
Yeah.
And
Midwest, nice.
Seattle is a very wealthy city, but we've got problems. Yeah. We've got open-air drug marts.
Yeah.
We've got the homeless tents, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not seeing that here. And I've asked people, I said, do they kind of like clean it up for the convention? They said, well, you know, there's an occasional, you know, person here or there.
Yeah.
But no, we don't have those.
We don't have nearly the problems that you see on the East or West Coast. It's not that we're without challenges. There's certainly doubt, and particularly more Milwaukee than elsewhere. But I think across America, if you look, if America wants to know what four more years of Joe Biden would be, look at our biggest cities and the problems we face.
Look at the bluest cities.
Exactly.
Look at Portland. Look at San Francisco, look at Seattle.
And you compare it, and people say, oh, that's different because those are urban areas. Look at Indianapolis and San Diego, which have historically, not always, but historically been more likely to be led by Republicans, and all the rest have been led by not just Democrats, but liberals,
yep.
Radicals.
Progressives, leftists. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. Chicago, in a couple of weeks, with the DNC's there, I laughed. I said, there'd be no better contrast, because if you want to see how screwed up America will be,
really
look at
great.
A once great city. Still beautiful city, but a once great city, and how liberal policies can just really ravage it. And sadly, you guys know bits and pieces of that in Seattle and down in Portland and elsewhere.
That is a really great observation, contrasting Milwaukee, the city, with Chicago, mm-hmm. the city, which is 90 minutes away.
Yeah, because even though it's a Democrat, it's a blue-collar area. I like to say conservative voices can win, because I actually was the Milwaukee County Executive before.
That's
the
right.
One and only Republican to hold that spot. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great history there. Even once upon a time, there were actually socialist mayors here.
Oh,
back,
I remember.
Back
yeah.
in the middle of the last century, but they weren't what you'd think of today. They were actually German heritage, clean, balanced budgets, generous benefits for folks in need.
And they weren't all Democrats fighting Bob La Folla.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Republican populist.
Yeah.
No, a little bit of my history.
Yeah.
Anyway, Scott Walker, the reason I wanted to get a few minutes with you here, asking how you feel about this ticket.
I think it's awesome. I said on Monday, and I saw it revalidated last night, that J.D. Vance, more than politics, more than being a senator, and I'm glad to see his book now is back up in the number one bestseller. I'm glad that Netflix.
Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah, is the adaptation of that on Netflix is up like 1,000-fold. Mm-hmm. People need to share that with their neighbors.
Yeah.
Tell them to watch that, because they're a lot undecided, persuaded voters might actually watch the Netflix stuff more than a convention speech. See that this guy, you know, his mother was a drug addict, although praise the Lord, she was there last night, nearly 10 years.
Oh, that was a wonderful moment.
Of addiction. But single mom, suffering addiction, a tough as nails grandmother. I mean, really tough as nails. He talked about it last night. Abject poverty, like so many families coming out of the Appalachian Mountains, coming not just through Kentucky and Ohio, but Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, mm-hmm. all through this quarter. The old Rust Belt.
Yeah.
These are the Americans who feel forgotten by all politicians in Washington, not just the liberal Democrats, but many other Republicans. They feel forgotten. Not only has J.D. Vance lived that life, but Donald Trump is their champion.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was elected in 2016 here in Wisconsin and across the country in key battleground states because those families, those men and women who felt forgotten, mm-hmm. found a champion in Donald Trump. We need to reinforce that message that whether you live on the near north side of Milwaukee in abject poverty, in predominantly black neighborhoods, or you live in the smallest of small towns in an overwhelmingly white communities, that you have been forgotten, you have been let down. Mm-hmm. You don't need more government. You need a government that believes in you and wants to give you opportunity and prosperity, and not just another handout. And that's what this ticket provides.
I believe that you, Scott Walker, single-handedly helped turn the politics of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
It was a reliably liberal state for the most part.
Yeah.
And you not only made it happen, but you brought conservatism, not just a Republican right. guy, but a conservative view.
Well, that's what I said about the U.K. The reason conservatives, the Tories lost there is they didn't act like conservatives.
Right.
The reason we won here, even in the midst of a recall with nearly $100 million spent against us, is because conservative ideas work. And if given the chance, the voters will affirm those who stand up for those positions over and over again. I think it's why, despite some of the personality differences that Donald Trump and I have on substance,
yeah,
we physically saw it Saturday night, like a phoenix rising out of the ashes with that fist coming up. But,
wasn't that
but his personality is,
yep.
he is a fighter.
Yeah.
I was on CNN the other day, and David Axelrod kind of gave him a backhanded compliment, talked about how iconic the picture was, said he couldn't believe that even in that moment he had the presence of mind to think, what was the camera shot? I said, that wasn't what he thought. He thought, F you is what he thought to yeah. that guy. He said, I think.
You're not stopping us.
He said, right, America, for my family, for my children, for my grandchildren, than for this country, I am not going down. I've got a fight to have. I'm going to defend the American people. And that's what, again, people like J.D. Vance's family and others across America felt. Nobody cared for them like that. Donald Trump does.
Was a fighter. Thank you so much for swinging by. One last question is, because he won Wisconsin in 2016, 2020 went the other way. What's going to happen in 2024?
Even with all the good vibes, a unified convention, unlike the dysfunction we see going to Chicago, this is going to be a few thousand votes. The last two elections in a state of nearly 6 million, less than 25,000 votes. As conservatives, we can't take anything granted. Good news is the group I work with, Young America's Foundation, our polling shows number one issue, college students, economy.
Economy.
So we keep talking about affordability. Don't talk about inflation. Don't even talk about the economy. Talk about affordability. Voters get it. We're going to get it done.
Got it.
Good to be here.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
We saw each other in Bellevue last year.
I'll be back in August.
Looking forward to seeing Scott Walker. Appreciate him making some time. Former two-term governor of Wisconsin here campaigning for President Trump. I wanted to spend a moment to say the success of the convention is borne out by the Democrats being resigned to replacing their nominee. I believe that the end is nigh for the Joe Biden candidacy. I believe that when I take to the airwaves on Monday, I don't believe that Joe Biden will be the Democrats' nominee. This convention, the Democrats were hoping would be divisive. It's just precisely the opposite. It's all come together. Not only has it come together, but people are inspired. People are enthused. There's intensity behind what they've seen here. You can feel it. And if you talk to anyone, regardless of politics, they'll say, oh, yeah, now you can feel, you know, these guys got it going for them. At the same time, I think Van Jones said this so well. Van Jones is ardently liberal with CNN. And he was comparing President Biden to President Trump, the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. Here's where he came down.
There are a lot of people who want Biden to stay in. I want to just keep pointing out there's still grassroots love for Joe Biden. Everybody doesn't agree. But today is a terrible day. If you pull back and look at this thing, strength versus weakness, a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just stopped Biden. You've got the nominees of this party getting their butts kissed. Biden's getting his butt kicked by his own party. The Democrats are coming apart. The Republicans are coming together. That's what's happening.
That is what's happening. And I think the Democrats are making a serious move to moving Biden out. Why? Because they're not just concerned about Joe Biden losing the presidency. They, meaning Democratic leaders in the U.S. Senate, Democratic leaders in the House. Remember, the Democrats wanted to take back the House. I think Democratic leaders in Congress are now feeling that not only is Joe Biden going to lose his job, but he's going to cost them their job. Listen to Steve Kornacki talking about the state of the U.S. Senate races.
Do we have blue seats, Democratic-held seats in red states? And the answer is yes. There, in fact, are three of them. Democrats have a seat in West Virginia, Ohio, Montana. All three of those Democratic-held Senate seats are up this year. All three of those states voted for Donald Trump in 2020 by 40 points in West Virginia, more than 20 in Montana, and 8 in Ohio. So from the Democratic standpoint, if they're not picking off any new Republican seats, here's the reality. They've got to protect all three of those seats to stay at 51 if Donald Trump becomes president. Because remember, as president, the White House party would control a 50-50 Senate by the vice president casting the tie-breaking vote. If Biden is reelected, Democrats could afford to lose one of those three seats in Republican states. And again, West Virginia here, most folks in both parties are already saying, is essentially a Republican pickup. So, you know, if the Democrats win the presidential race, they could lose West Virginia and then nothing else. And then there's a second layer here. We'll just take you through quickly. There are a bunch of battleground states. You see five of them here. These are all battlegrounds in the presidential election. All five of these are currently Democratic-held seats. Here's recent polling in the last month or two in there, and you do see the Democrats leading in the recent polling in all five of those battleground seats. That is good news for Democrats, but here's the ominous sign for them. Polling in those same states shows Donald Trump ahead in four of them and tied in a fifth. So for Democrats, they need to kind of defy political gravity if Trump continues to lead these states to hang on to these Senate seats. If the presidential race and the Senate race to start to sync up in polling, if these go from blue to red, that's when Democrats are potentially looking at very big losses. Okay. And you hear about scenarios where Republicans have a big majority.
Because I think that drives home exactly what we are looking at. The Democrats fear a landslide. And yesterday we played John King's analysis of the polling data state by state, where the best scenario for the Democrats is Donald Trump. The best scenario for the Democrats right now, state by state, the Electoral College, you need 270 electoral votes to win. The best scenario for the Democrats has Donald Trump winning 272, meaning he wins. The worst case scenario for the Democrats has Donald Trump winning over 330 or more electoral votes. And then you have Joe Biden and how he has fumbled and mumbled in just the last couple of days. And we've got some examples of that. But I believe the end is here for Biden as the nomination. I think he's going to pull out. Personally, I don't think he has COVID. I think they needed to get him off the campaign trail. I think they needed an excuse to postpone having the virtual delegate count for him. That's what I think is going on. The reason I don't think he has COVID, did you notice he got on and off Air Force One without a mask and he has COVID? The man doesn't have COVID. They just need to get him off the campaign trail. That's what I think is going on. All right. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, you know what we do during the 8 o'clock hour. It is time for the Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest, where we give you a word. You have a full 45 minutes now to text the word, so don't be in a hurry. Don't text and drive. And when you text the word to our regular call-in text line, 206-421-5757, that's 206-421-5757, you are automatically entered into a daily drawing for a $50 Daniel's Broiler gift card and an end-of-the-week drawing for a seven-day cruise to Mexico. We're talking about 7 days with a cabin, including a balcony cabin. Stops along the way in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, $500 spending cash. And for some reason, you don't want to go on the cruise, no problem. Just take $3,000 cash, and all you have to do is text the word DANCE, DANCE, D-A-N-C-E. Text the word DANCE to 206-421-5757. You have until 9 o'clock. You got plenty of time. So make it happen. Text the word DANCE, D-A-N-C-E, to 206-421-5757. A big thank you to our partners here, Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores. Another great place to go, by the way, right around the corner from the main drag at Ocean Shores. A great resort. Check it out, the Quinault Beach Resort and Casino. It's a very busy morning. A lot going on, not only at the Republican convention, but a lot going on in American politics, in part shaped by and triggered by what's happening here at this convention. And we have more coming your way right around the corner, including the Young Zach's favorite social media moment, the social media from socialists on the John Carlson Show. You got 25 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, in the midst of the Republican National Convention, and also this morning's Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. Once again, the word of the morning
is Dan. If you text that word, Dan, to 206-421-5757, you're automatically entered into a drawing for a gift card to Daniel's Broiler Steakhouse today. And at the end of the week, a seven-day cruise to Mexico. All right, young Zach. It is the favorite social media sweep of the day, social media from socialists. What do you got?
A once-in-a-lifetime social media from socialists here on the floor of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So some of our favorite socialists, Joy Reid and Jen Psaki on MSNBC last night, were commenting on Joe Biden's recent COVID diagnosis, as they called it, comparing it to Trump's assassination attempt. Let's play that audio.
Here's the question that I have on that. These two men are both elderly. Donald Trump is an elderly man who, for whatever reason, was given 9 seconds to take a iconic photo op during an active shooter situation. Weird situation. We'll figure that out one day. But his survival of that and bouncing right back and going right to his convention is being conveyed in the media world as a sign of strength. This current president of the United States is 81 years old and has COVID. Should he be fine in a couple of days? Doesn't that convey exactly the same thing? That he's strong enough, older than Trump, to have gotten something that used to really be fatal to people his age. So if he does fine out of it and comes back and is able to do rallies, isn't that exactly the same?
It should.
I mean, it's not exactly the same. It's not the same incident, but it's an elderly man coming through out of an illness.
It should.
Ridiculous.
Well, we just played audio from CNN's Van Jones, who's just as liberal, but a lot more sane than Joy Reid, who said a bullet couldn't stop Trump. A virus just sidelined Joe Biden. And here she is saying, can't we really compare, if Joe Biden comes back in a few days, can't we compare that to Trump returning after surviving an assassination attempt?
First of all, no, you can't.
Oh, man.
And I also take a lot of issue with the way they talk about Trump bouncing back from this. The media is conveying it as a sign of strength. I think it is a sign of strength.
Yes.
If these roles were
That's
reversed,
the other thing. The
what
media's...
if someone took a shot at Biden and this was the role, and there was a, first of all, they wouldn't be commenting about some sort of photo op. They wouldn't be making comments like that. Second of all, there would be, I mean, oh, he's so strong and full of vigor, and this man can survive anything.
A business leader friend of mine had lunch a couple of days ago with a couple of very prominent Democrats. One of them a former legislator, one a current King County office holder. And they were just beside themselves saying, can you believe that Trump, when someone tried to take him out, acted like a freaking, this their words, and they didn't say freaking, a freaking superhero. they were just beside themselves. And so the best that MSNBC can say is the media conveyed him. No, they didn't convey him. People saw it. People saw how Trump reacted in the moment.
This was a moment that, for I think most Americans, sidelined the fact that he is Donald Trump and became American history, and we can appreciate it for that regardless of your political beliefs. I just talked to a coworker back home about that. This is not a Trump moment. This is an American moment, a presidential moment, and I think that's showing here at the RNC.
When President Theodore Roosevelt, or former president at that time, Theodore Roosevelt, was shot while campaigning, he was campaigning to get another term in office, and he trying to make a political comeback. He was shot in the chest, and his glass case for his bifocals, his glass case caught most of the bullet, but it still entered his chest. And Roosevelt said, "You're not stopping me from making this speech."
Just about a mile from where we're sitting, right?
And he delivered it anyway, and he went on and delivered it. Trump, when he was shot and he hit the ground and then was tackled by Secret Service agents using their bodies to prevent any more bullets from striking him, when Trump was finally lifted to his feet, you know, he didn't cower. He didn't run to the he instead said to the Secret Service agents around him, wait a second. And he goes and he raises his fist. Fight, fight, fight. That's not something you rehearse.
No,
that's not something you practice. That is Trump in the moment. We saw literally the essence of Trump, and America saw it too. And that is why his opponents are right now
you know, basically desperately spinning the event. It's not going to work.
Well, that's it for the social media sweep. There's newsmakers walking all around with a little bit of time left in the show. Let's see who can bring on shortly. Hopefully we'll get some guests.
It's the Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 31 minutes after 8. Good morning. It's 24 minutes to 9 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We are still hearing reports that something unfortunate has befallen President Xi in China. The reports are that he has suffered a stroke. No word on how serious it was. It apparently happened at the Chinese Communist Party's third plenary session, but there's been very few details. And when we hear more, we will let you know. President Trump will be speaking tonight, and of course, I'm sure he will be addressing the issue of the attempt on his life last Saturday. However, he was speaking with a private gathering just a couple of days ago, and it was not for broadcast, but somebody did tape it. And here is what the president said about being shot and how it has changed his outlook.
This has been our best campaign, and then I got shot. How does that happen?
People are chanting, fight, fight, which is what Trump chanted.
Well, you say, how did that happen? But I got lucky. God was with me, I tell you. That's what they call a close call. That was an amazing, horrible thing, amazing thing. And in many ways, it changes your attitude, your viewpoint on life. And I think, honestly, I think you appreciate God even more. I really do. Amen. Because something happened that not that it was pleasant. It wasn't like it was a complete miss, but it was pretty terrible that can happen.
I am of the view that he had a guardian angel on his shoulder, because had he not turned his head ever so slightly at that moment, then that bullet would have hit his temple in the lower part of his skull. And he would either be fighting for his life or we would have lost him. So we were oh so lucky. And I'm not saying that as someone who's in his political party. We are just very lucky that we were spared the national trauma of an assassination. A nation going through something like that is a nation that is really embroiled in destabilized and in a very, very tough shape. Anyway, I'm glad that we were spared that by literally an inch. That has not stopped some people. A professor at Carnegie Mellon University, okay, not some crazy left-wing organization, but Carnegie Mellon University, has posted on social media that the shooting was actually staged. The professor, her name is Uju Anya, she's an associate professor at Carnegie Mellon University, made the comments hours after the attempt on President Trump's life. Quote, people dying, she was referring to Corey Comparator. People dying doesn't make the attack any less staged. Someone who thought the attack was real could have killed others trying to prevent harm. Also, someone could have shot the shooter to hide the plot. Politicians kill all the time and kill many more people to steal power, she added, and said, people died behind this farce. Actual people's lives gone for them to stage this stupid show. Again, this isn't some crazy, unhinged, radical activist ranting on the streets. This is a professor who regards herself as an anti-racist, a feminist, and an ally of the LGBTQ+ community. I would love to know if what the school has to say about something like this. She currently teaches and conducts research primarily, quote, examining race, gender, sexual, and social class identities in new language learning through the experiences of African-American students, close quote. And again, Carnegie Mellon. It shows you just how deluded some people in our society are, and how unhinged they are from everyday life. And yet they hold occupations of responsibility. And yet they hold well-paid and, in some cases, tenured positions. There's a lot that's been going on here, and because of the success of this convention, and because Joe Biden's recent public appearances are doing nothing to inspire confidence in him following the disastrous debate and then the unimpressive interview he had with George Stephanopoulos and then several other speaking appearances, I believe that an effort underway to move him off the ticket. Here he is. He gave an interview to BET, that's Black Entertainment Television, yesterday. And here's just a couple of excerpts from their conversation. The first is you'll hear him appear to forget the name of his defense secretary.
And so it's all about treating people with dignity. And it's about making sure that, look, I mean, for example, look at the heat I'm getting because I named Secretary of Defense, who's a black man. I named Ketanji Brown. I mean, because of the people I've named.
Okay, do you really think that Lloyd Austin, this is the Lloyd Austin who was hiding his medical condition from his own staff and then later apologizing for not being transparent. This is not someone who's being criticized because of his race. He's being criticized for some of his policies. He's being criticized for being an enthusiastic supporter of bringing DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion policies into the Pentagon. But he's not being criticized because of what he looks like any more than Joe Biden is being criticized for his border policies because of what he looks like. He's being criticized because the policies don't work. And Lloyd Austin's policies often do not work. And then there is this. Just listen to him mumble through. He's talking about bringing the internet, affordable internet, to areas that still don't have it. And here is how he was explaining it.
Make sure there's access to affordable internet, just like in Roosevelt's time, you know, back in earlier than that, making sure there was electricity and agriculture in the rural areas. That's all. It takes time for it to happen. And so it's just taking time for people to see it.
Do you really think that guy's going to be on the November ballot? I do not. I believe that, and I've been saying this throughout the morning, I don't believe he really has COVID. He got on and off Air Force One after his diagnosis without wearing a mask. Do you see anyone around him wearing a mask? He doesn't have COVID. They needed to pull him off the campaign trail. CBS reporting that former Speaker Nancy Pelosi told him that not only is he likely going to lose, but he might be taking both houses of Congress down with him, which is what's really got Washington, D.C. upset. It's bad enough if Biden's going to lose his job when he's taking your job, then that really makes it an emergency. I think that a graceful exit is being looked for here. A graceful exit is not saying, hey, I'm behind and things are not getting better. And yeah, that heroic response to the attempt on his life shown by President Trump. And then you've got a unified, energized convention for crying out loud. I'm a loser. They tell me I'm going to lose. And so I got to get out of this race. Of course not. That's not how you do that. You do that because a health issue has emerged, and for the good of the country, putting the country first, I'm going to pull back. That's what's happening. That's what I believe is happening. It is 11 minutes to 9 o'clock. Again, that means you have 11 minutes to text the word dance. That's dance to 206-421-5757 to be entered into our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest, and that's all you got to do. Good morning, everybody. Well, we got more than just your standard coverage. We will be carrying the former president's speech live tonight from the convention. Again, we will be carrying Donald Trump's speech live right here on 570 KVI. And we will have an extended edition of the Ari Hoffman show. So Ari will be broadcasting, leading right up to the president's remarks. I might see if I can talk Ari into letting me join him for at least part of that before it happens. So that's going to be a special treat for KVI listeners, an extended version of the Ari Hoffman show leading up to the president's speech, which we will be carrying live right here on 570 KVI. We want to thank Northgate Rare Coins again for their sponsorship. Boy, has this been a worthwhile trip here for your KVI crew. And we appreciate all the great work that's been done on both sides of the microphone. Finally, real quickly, the Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. We're keeping it going even while we are here in Milwaukee. A 7-night cruise to Mexico. We'll have a drawing tomorrow for it. If you want to be entered into that contest, just text the word dance to 206-421-5757. Text dance to 206-421-5757. Have a great day, and it'll be a great evening.